Thank you, Blessing and Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, May 15th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Human Rights Watch releases a new report claiming the floods that displaced thousands of families from the Tokwe Mukosi area were artificially induced to force villagers into sugarcane farming at an ethanol project in Chiredzi.
That is mischievous and blatant lies, because from government and his government, we are continuing to feed the people and to call for support in order to feed the families, and the families have never starved.
But the government dismisses the report, saying it is meant to turn the people of Mashingo against the ZANU-PF government.
And the future of the independent media looks bleak, with publishers of the Daily News and the independent newspapers in financial dire straits.
Human Rights Watch released a new report today claiming the floods that displaced the thousands of families from the Tokwe Mukosi area were artificially induced. The report alleges the government then went further to deny food aid to about 20,000 of the displaced people to force them into sugarcane farming at an ethanol project in Chiredzi. The government immediately dismissed the report as hogwash. The report alleges the Zimbabwe National Army has already relocated 3,000 families from the flooded Tokwe Mukosi Dam Basin to a camp on a sugarcane farm and ethanol project allegedly jointly owned by the ruling ZANU-PF party and Billy Rottenberg, a businessman and ZANU-PF supporter. Displaced residents and dam project workers, says Human Rights Watch, contend that the floods were artificially induced and that authorities flooded the area to forcibly evict people without compensation and hire them as low-paid workers on the sugarcane farm. Some displaced villagers have been refusing to move from the Chingwizi temporary holding camp, demanding the government compensate them upfront. Some families allege the government is also not giving them enough land in Chiredzi. Human rights researcher Dewa Mavinga says the government should investigate the allegations and also compensate the villagers before moving them.
We are highlighting that there are a number of concerns from the displaced people at Chingwizi with regards the nature of the floods at Tokwe Mukosi Dam, where many believe that the floods may have been artificially induced in order to force people off the land without paying them proper, adequate, or just and fair compensation, and also in order to move them over 150 kilometers away from Tokwe Mukosi into Mwenezi district at Nwanesi Ranch, which is owned by the ruling party, where they are now being forced to become sugarcane farmers, contract farmers on the ranch of the ethanol project. These are the concerns that we are raising, that the people have not been given compensation, they have not been consulted, and are now being denied food in order to force them into sugarcane production.
Do you, as Human Rights Watch, believe that these floods were artificially induced, especially when we look at the rain season that Zimbabwe had for 2014, 2013? It was quite heavy. There were floods elsewhere in the country. Why would these ones be specifically artificially induced?
From what we gathered from the people that we spoke to, the so-called floods occurred only upstream of the dam, and primarily because the sluices or the sluice gates that could have been opened to manage the flow of water from the dam wall were not opened. And what we are saying is that these are credible reports from people who strongly believe that this is what happened. But what we are saying is to urge government to urgently investigate this thing and establish whether or not it indeed occurred as people are alleging, and if so, to hold accountable those responsible.
What are the recommendations are you, as Human Rights Watching, giving the government and any other organizations that could be involved in trying to assist people in Chingwizi?
Well, what we're saying is that government should pay just and fair compensation to the displaced people, should not force them to become sugarcane farmers on Nwanasi Ranch, but should give them an option of farmland and pastures adequate for their livelihoods.
That was human rights lawyer Dewama Vinga of Human Rights Watch on the line from Johannesburg. Reacting, Mashingo resident minister Kudakwashe Basikiti dismissed the report as an outrageous piece of work meant to turn the people against the government.
Those are very mischievous characters. You see, you cannot get people to deny the truth and the reality when it is facing them. Then you fail to understand them, Kuti, what really is the motive, because the flood, in terms of preparing for that dam, enough was done, and all the analysis getting down to 40, 50 years rainfall pattern was used to study, and the dam and cofferdam which was built was anchored to receive that amount of rainfall, with the highest recorded within the 50-year period. So it surpassed that record and ended up flooding to levels which we thought the dam could only get to that level after 4 years of good rain season.
The Human Rights Watch is saying the government is threatening to deny food aid to about 20,000 of the displaced people at a ruling party ethanol project in Chiredzi. What is your response to that?
That is mischievous and blatant lies, because from government and this government, we are continuing to feed the people and to call for support in order to feed the families, and the families have never starved up to this day. But we continue to appeal to the corporate world to assist government in the provision of food. The bulk of support was coming from companies in Zimbabwe, the churches, organizations, individuals we are supporting. And very little food support has come from the donors. But the donors were giving some other facilities like tents, medicine and things like that. We are quite grateful. But we are saying the people are settled there to carry out their normal life, to decide what crop to use, to put on, and the ethanol plant was not a government project, as being alluded. It's one investor who wanted ethanol plant, but government has said we cannot do ethanol project where we have settled the people. And the government is very clear that area has been set aside for the token cost victims, and they will also use the water which displaced them to irrigate their own fields, planting and growing their own crops. Government will not force them to grow sugarcane. They will rather want the people to have knowledge and understanding of which crops will give the maximum economic benefit. And so that allegation is just mischievous.
That was Mashingo resident minister Kudakwashe Basikiti.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington. Did you know you can listen to web audio replays of our programs on our website and sign up for newsletters in English, Shona and Ndebele?
Visit our site at www.studio7news.com. You can also give us feedback by text message. Our number is 1-202-465-0318.
The future of the independent media in Zimbabwe looks bleak following reports that Alpha Media Holdings and the Associated Newspapers of Zimbabwe, ANZ, are facing serious financial problems threatening to ground their operations to a halt. ANZ, publishers of the Daily News and the Daily News on Sunday, has closed its provincial bureaus, laying off stringers. The group is reportedly planning on retrenching more workers. The Financial Gazette, which is partly owned by former Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe Governor Gideon Gono, and the Zimbabwe Mail, that is owned by a consortium of business people, including Transport Minister Obed Mpofu, are the only two independent outfits not showing signs of stress. Efforts to get comment from the ANZ and Alpha Media were fruitless, but sources within both organizations confirmed this development. State media publications, on the other hand, appear unfazed by the harsh economic climate affecting the independent media. For perspective, we turn to media trainer Zenzele Ndebele, also production manager at Radio Dialogue. He says, among other issues, the government's move stopping parastatals from advertising in independent newspapers is crippling the publications.
Well, this is a sad story, basically, and it's sad for Zimbabwe and it's sad for the communities and the people in Zimbabwe, because that means they are going to be deprived of independent information. But what we need to realize is that basically it reflects the state of the economy, because I think on several occasions this year the government has postponed the pay date for civil servants because they doesn't have the money. So if the government doesn't have the money, it therefore follows that companies are going to survive. It shows that the economic situation in Zimbabwe is terrible. But unfortunately for the media organizations, because it means that, and also you realize that before the elections, before the July 31 elections, some donors here and there would put adverts, would actually give a little bit of support in here there to independent media, which is something that has reduced over the elections.
What do you think is the way forward? What has to be done to change this situation?
The economy needs to improve, and I think my suspicion, I remember at one point, I think people like Saramba at one point said they are going to deal with the private media without actually shooting a single bullet. And I'm thinking maybe they gave instructions to parastatals not to advertise in private media. So, I mean, if the parastatals, who are the big government, basically is the biggest advertiser. And if private media don't get advertisers from government, they can't survive. So I think the only way forward is for the economy to improve. If the economy is to improve, private companies are going to survive, they are going to get money, and they are going to advertise. But currently, we cannot talk of any private companies because most of them are closing down. And we know that you cannot survive on sales only, because most of these newspapers are circulating less than 10,000 copies a day. So that means basically you're getting less than $10,000 a day in newspapers. One project that is capital intensive, without money you can survive. And I will also urge the international community to actually come in and support private media in Zimbabwe, because we really need alternative means of communication in Zimbabwe.
That was media trainer Zenzele Ndebele. He's also the production manager at Radio Dialogue. He spoke with Studio 7 from Maswingo.
United States Embassy has announced the names of 30 young Zimbabweans who will participate in President Barack Obama's 2014 Young African Leaders Initiative. The fellows were drawn from different professional backgrounds, including business, media, technology, law, education, civil society, health, arts and environment. They will spend 6 weeks studying business, civic leadership and entrepreneurship at different institutions of higher learning in the United States. Five of the participants will remain in the U.S. to participate in internship programs for 8 more weeks. James Msipa, one of the 2014 fellows, tells Studio 7 reporter Mavelas Mklanganyawie he intends to use his time in the United States to learn more about his trade and how to expand his micro-lending business.
First and foremost, it's going to sharpen my leadership skills. And it is also going to teach me best practice in terms of how a corporate is managed. I also expect to learn a lot in terms of corporate governance and also to hone my fundraising skills as well. As my business is very capital intensive because we sell money, I should then have a lot of avenues to harness that money so that I can be able to sell it. So I believe this is an opportunity for me to be able to equip myself for my business to grow into the foreseeable future.
What process did you have to go through to be able for you to qualify for this YALI program?
I did not actually have to do any courses to qualify for the program, but I think the selection was solely on the business plan that I have for the company that I founded in 2011 and the projects that we have undertaken to date and the success stories in those projects that we currently undertaking. We are currently serving a market of over 4,500 clients, and our balance sheet is now over 1.2 million. So I think those are the things that the panel looked at in terms of the potential for the business to grow into the foreseeable future.
What exactly are you doing at the moment that you hope to value add by being in this program when you do return?
One very important project that we are undertaking is the commercialization of cassava production in Zimbabwe. We are doing it in the eastern parts of Zimbabwe. This project is very key in turning around the agricultural sector.
James Msipa, one of the Young African Leaders Initiative fellows, speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mtlanganyahui from Harare.
More than 100 youths drawn from various parts of Zimbabwe are today attending a constitutional conference in Bulawayo aimed at finding ways of using the country's supreme law to empower young people. Liberty Bebe, director of the National Youth Development Trust, which is convening the conference, says they are also exploring the role of various stakeholders in implementing the country's new constitution. At least 250 laws still need to be harmonized with the supreme law of the country, enacted almost a year ago. The theme of today's Youth Constitutional Conference is From Constitution Making to Building a Culture of Constitutionalism. Bebe speaks with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube about this theme and related conference issues.
Our constitutional conference is a follow-up to the meetings that we have been holding throughout Matabeleland on the raising awareness for young people on the new constitution. And now we have come to a stage where we are saying, given the fact that the young people that we have consulted have knowledge of the constitution, how can they carry out initiatives that will push their local leadership to see the full implementation of the constitution? So today we have a conference where we are briefly looking at the history of constitution making, looking at the constitution itself, but the bulk of the conference is about how can we move from constitution making to building a culture of constitutionalism. What do we need to do? What are the steps that we need to take? What is the role of different stakeholders, the role of government, the role of civil society, the role of young people, the role of community leadership in building this new culture of constitutionalism?
As far as you are concerned, do you think that this conference is going to have any impact on the youths?
In terms of raising awareness and giving people knowledge about the constitution, it will play a significant role. In terms of alerting people in general about their rights and their responsibilities in the new constitution, it will play a significant role. In terms of allowing people to know what they can do, what avenues are there to push for the implementation of the constitution, it will play a significant role. The challenge is that you need political players that are willing to implement that constitution.
That was Liberty Bebe, director of the National Youth Development Trust, speaking to Studio 7 from Bulawayo.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Chris, we go to look at regional and international news.
A court in Sudan has sentenced a pregnant woman to death for refusing to renounce her Christian faith. 27-year-old Miriam Yah Ibrahim, who's already the mother to a 20-month-old son, was convicted of apostasy on Sunday and given 4 days to abandon her faith.
President Barack Obama has dedicated a new museum in New York recounting the horror of the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks in the United States that killed nearly 3,000 people. The American leader today recalled the heroism of rescue workers who helped save thousands of people trapped in the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center after Al-Qaeda hijackers crashed the passenger jets into the skyscrapers.
And a riot at a Taiwanese steel plant in Vietnam has killed a Chinese worker as thousands across the country protest against a Chinese oil rig in disputed waters of the South China Sea. Officials say today the riot in central Vietnam's Hantin province was the first deadly incident in a wave of anti-Chinese protests.
As reported earlier, Human Rights Watch is alleging that the Zimbabwe government is withholding food aid to about 20,000 people displaced by rising waters at the Toke Mokosi Dam to make them work at an ethanol project allegedly owned by the ruling party and controversial businessman Billy Rattenberge. The rights organization claims the floods, according to interviews with locals and workers on the dam project, were artificially induced. The government has denied the accusations and said the families have had time to plan for their move from the dam, where construction started in the 1990s. For more on the report, Tatenda Gumbo turned to human rights researcher Dewa Mavinga of Human Rights Watch and Tafazwa Msarara of the Resource Exploitation Watch. Msarara dismisses the report, alleging it's a typical NGO report meant to tarnish the image of the government.
The report itself is one-sided. It does not give the right of reply to government on the serious allegations that is making with regards to relocations, compensation, and the general provision of some of the constitutional rights that are entitled to the affected people. Well, if you look at it, also one has to contextualize things and say the government does not owe necessarily the people who are affected. But the liability or the obligations arise out of international convention that when such calamities arise, the concerned government must mobilize support and give necessary compensation to the affected people. But it is not public secret that President Mugabe's government has got a serious liquidity problems. We have seen that the government is doing everything, is battling actually to meet its wage bill obligations as well. And this event, which is not budgeted for, is very difficult to quickly settle.
Mr. Mavinga, your response here. Mr. Msarara is accusing that the Human Rights Watch is giving out a one-sided report. There is no view from the government.
Not at all. If you look at the report that we have just done, the recommendations are primarily to the government of Zimbabwe. So it is a report by an NGO directed to the government of Zimbabwe to act. What we are saying is credible. We have established on the ground really that there was no need for people to be uprooted from Toke Mkosi and be transferred by the army some 150 kilometers away. It does not make sense. You will recall that the Toke Mkosi Dam construction began in April 1998, and we are in 2014. All these years, government was fully aware of the compensation and relocation needs of these 20,000 people. It should have acted.
Mr. Msarara, as you alluded earlier, the government may be, I don't know if you'd agree, that somewhat dropped the ball on this issue, knowing that these people had to be relocated prior to the issue of the dam.
By his own submission, Ms. Mavinga mentioned that the dam construction started in 1998, and it has been 16 years now. That delay on its own is indicative of constraints, financial constraints, just to finish the dam, let alone to commit to all the relocations. That report, if it was meant for government, then it shouldn't have been published and it shouldn't have been a debate for now. But it's a similar report that has been published in order to denigrate the current government. And it's not in the spirit of engagement that one would publish a report and subsequently the report becomes a subject of a radio program. Well, I don't know where he wanted the people to go. He's not telling us. Obviously, logically, you have to take people to a vacant place. You can't take them to some other place that is occupied. And if ZANU-PF is in power, then it has to take responsibility and ownership of that problem, and it is taken to that farm. That farm is not owned by ZANU-PF. That farm is a Nyuanense range. But in any case, there was sugar cane farming in that area prior to the arrival of these families. So it only makes commercial sense that it's only sugar cane farming that is more immediate, more profitable. So really, if he knows of any other place where these people should have supposed to go, then let it be. He should tell us where these people should go.
Mr. Mavinga, I'll end here with you, your response to what Mr. Msarara is saying.
Well, Mr. Chakwera Musarara is trying in vain to defend the indefensible. The people at Chingwizi camp do not want to grow sugarcane, and government should not force them, full stop. Government's obligation is to provide alternative land as promised, where these people are free to grow crops of their choice. These people are
which land are you talking about? You should tell us, be specific, because government has done a commitment. You as civil society, can you provide a better idea out of these things rather than just to criticize? I think we will be more constructive.
I'm saying the framework that government is using is wrong. Government should move away from forcing people to do things that they do not want simply because they are victims of a so-called flood.
That was human rights researcher Dewa Mavinga of Human Rights Watch and Tafazwa Msarara of the Resource Exploitation Watch. They spoke earlier with Studio 7 reporter Tatenda Gumbo.
The Zimbabwe National Statistics Agency says year-on-year deflation decelerated from 0.91% in March to 0.26% last month. Figures released by the agency today also show Figures released by the agency today also show prices on a month-on-month basis increased in the same period from 0.22% to 0.58%. The country slid into a liquidity crunch last year following elections that were overwhelmingly won by President Robert Mugabe and his ZANU-PF party. Economic commentator and Coalition for Market and Liberal Solutions leader Rejoice Ngwenya tells reporter Ntungameli Nkomo the stagnation of the economy is worsening by the day, adding the masses are feeling the pinch.
Figures are just a reflection of a statistical, expression, you know. So in layman's terms, it's only, easy to understand what it means not to have prices going up. Because prices generally go up because there is a state of expectation and consumer enthusiasm when government employees have been paid, when tobacco money is coming in, when diamond money is coming to the country. Now, there is no money coming in. If it is coming in, it is very, very little money. So citizens of this country, their disposable income is so low that there is no point even increasing the price because nobody is going to buy. So when nobody is buying, suppliers are not getting anything. Like I said, you know, there's no money coming in, so there might be money going out. The state of deflation or non-increase of prices, it's an advantage to consumers that already have the cash. Now, Zimbabwe consumers don't have that sort of money.
Once a country gets into deflationary mode, how does it dig out?
Very difficult, like what Dr. Kubule Mlambo, you know, the deputy governor said, it's very difficult to come out of deflation. The point really is that what we can be tampering around with are the, you know, usual streams of inflows that are associated with an expanding economy. That is foreign direct investment, remittances from the diaspora, remittances from exports. So we want to see money coming in, because when there is no money coming in, it means that we still cannot consume anything. We cannot save money that we don't have. So savings equals investment. So when there's no savings, there is no investment. So the most critical aspect that we need to look at now is a policy reform that allows money to come in. With oil like Angola, we just increase the number of barrels we export, but we don't have that. So those guys that are in control of diamonds, you know, the ZANU-PF guys, are the guys that are exporting these things, and the remittances are very questionable. This is why Chinamasa and BT kept asking, where are the remittances for these diamonds?
That was economic commentator and Coalition for Market and Liberal Solutions leader Rejoice Ngwenya.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will discuss with experts and you, the listeners, about allegations by Human Rights Watch that Chingwizi floods were artificially induced.
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318.